Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Paddock Project. What a race weekend in Baku. This was absolutely incredible. We have so much to discuss about the entire weekend, particularly quali, which was longer than the race, and we'll get into why. The big question heading into this weekend was whether McLaren would win constructors. It was mathematically possible if they beat Ferrari and Mercedes by enough, but boy, did we get a surprise weekend from them, and not in a good way. So safe to say they have not clinched constructors. I'm sure that will be happening probably at the next race, but yeah, unfortunately not the weekend they wanted. But Baku generally did not disappoint. This windy street circuit that also somehow has good passing just really showed up and delivered. And one fun fact about Baku that I love is that Checo is the only repeat winner here since the track has been on the calendar since 2016. So I'm very excited to see the king of the streets back next year. In this episode, I'll be talking about the latest headlines, including the sprint calendar that's released for next year, and then dive into the most insane quali we've possibly ever had. And then McLaren's disaster weekend, as I mentioned, Carlos's podium excitement. For those of you watching on YouTube, you can see I'm wearing my Williams jersey. And then whether or not I think Max Verstappen is still in contention for the championship. And I can't believe that's a question or a sentence that I'm saying out loud, but there is some stuff to discuss there. So let's dive into it. We'll get into some news first. So as I mentioned, the sprint calendar was announced for 2026, and we have Shanghai, Miami, Montreal, Silverstone, Zandvoort, and Singapore for next year. And this is the first sprint race for three of those places. So Montreal, Zandvoort, and Singapore have never hosted a sprint weekend. And Silverstone, interestingly, has not hosted one since 2021, where they hosted the inaugural sprint event. So it's going to be a fun time next year. And they're still sticking with six, which I know there were some questions about whether they would expand the sprint calendar or not. But safe to say, they're sticking with six, and we'll see how that goes down. Another track announcement is that Azerbaijan, Baku, was renewed until 2030. I do love the timing of these announcements when they come, because it's always like right before that race weekend and the excitement is in the air and people are super excited about it. I'll never forget being in Miami when they announced the Miami contract renewal, and I was like sitting in the paddock and I saw that news come through, and it's just fun to have that excitement as the weekend gets. And boy, did Baku kind of prove its spot this weekend. So I'm really stoked about that announcement. It's good to see a different kind of circuit stay on the calendar. I know some people have mixed feelings about classic tracks versus street circuits, but I do think it's fun to have a little bit of a mix. And Baku is certainly not a track that disappoints. So I'm really excited about that. Only a four-year renewal, so we'll see how that goes and whether they continue on from there, but happy for that. Next piece of news is I did promise on Instagram that I would talk about this Lando British Vogue article. So this came out this week, and it was really cool. Like, first of all, fire shoot. I love the photography. I heard some people saying maybe it wasn't like super groundbreaking, but I'm not an expert in fashion photography. So I personally enjoyed it. And I also just loved the article. If you have not read the article that accompanies the photo shoot, I highly recommend it, because it shows a little bit more of a personal side of Lando, which I really enjoyed hearing about. And I feel like he opened up about certain things. For those of you who like to follow the driver's personal lives, He talks about his now partner, so that's worth reading. I thought the timing of the article was interesting, and particularly the framing right up front about how his first priority is just enjoying it, having fun, sharing it with the people he loves, and then second priority is winning a championship. And I just feel like, when have we ever heard an F1 driver say that? And maybe that is true for Lando. Maybe that really is true. Or I don't know. Part of me feels like it is a little bit of a save face kind of thing if he doesn't win the championship, because it's, you know, looking less likely, especially after a couple of the past weekends. Although after this weekend, who knows? It's very much still up in the air. But I thought that was interesting framing. I did write some thoughts for the Paddock Journal, which I'll just read to you because it was more on the sort of business and marketing side of things. But I said, the fact that British Vogue chose to feature Norris speaks volumes. He hasn't won a title and may never do so, but his cultural visibility has already placed him in the same conversation, at least according to Vogue, as Hamilton and Verstappen. It signals that F1's value now extends well beyond performance into fashion, lifestyle, and broader influence. For Gen Z, Norris has become the poster child for what they value: relatability and cultural relevance over on-track results alone. And this was one of the most interesting things to me, is that they are placing him in the same conversation as Hamilton and Verstappen, despite the fact that he has not yet won a title. And when I say he may never do so, I'm not saying I don't think Lando will ever win a title. I just think it's very possible in Formula One, when you have 20 drivers vying for a title, that someone who's incredibly talented and championship material may not win a driver's championship. So that's probably true of someone like Charles Leclerc and other people. Now, don't jump down my throat about the fact that Charles might not win a championship in his career, but it's very possible that he won't. You have to have so many things come together at the right time, including the car and your team and your own performance. So it is a really hard thing to capture. And I think putting Norris in the same conversation as a 7-time world champion and a 4-time world champion is definitely a bold move. Some people probably roll their eyes at that a little bit, because Norris is having an incredible year. And yes, McLaren won constructors last year, but like, I don't think I would go so far as to say that Norris is kind of in the same league as those two at this stage. But it does kind of show how F1 has transcended just what happens on track. And I guess the question is how much? Like, is it still niche fame? This article is part of what makes the case that they really have, quote unquote, made it, when you're being covered by Vogue. And Lewis Hamilton has always like kind of stood out in that regard as being someone to transcend the sport and just have his hands and his stature involved in so many different things. But I think it's clear to me how much the sport and media to some degree is trying to make that the case for other drivers. We know that Lewis Hamilton is not going to be driving forever. So who is the next driver to sort of carry that torch forward? And it seems to me that a lot of people are making the case for Lando Norris. And it'll be interesting to see if that continues. And if Lando does win a championship, maybe it all just sort of builds on each other and he becomes this larger than life figure that Lewis Hamilton has become. If on track you don't have those results, then how big can Lando Norris's fame get? I don't know. Maybe the answer is just as big, but it'll be interesting to see if those things kind of go hand in hand with each other. One thing that seemed very clear to me from the photo shoot is that it wasn't very F1 or motorsport coded. And I think that was very intentional, just to try and break these drivers out into something bigger than just the sport. So anyway, I digress, but I thought that was really interesting to see. I really liked the piece. It was cool to hear more about Lando's kind of personal side. And yeah, it's just clear to me how much Gen Z sort of relates to him in a lot of ways. And I think deservedly so. He's very open. He's very transparent. He talks about his mental health challenges. And I think it's really refreshing and great to have someone of his stature and someone of his talent and caliber as a driver talking like that, because, you know, you contrast him to someone like Max Verstappen, who is very much one track minded, doesn't really talk openly about the pressures. It's all like racing on the brain at all times. And there's value in that too. That's probably how most F1 drivers have behaved or talked in the past, but it's a little bit refreshing, especially if Lando does win a championship, that you can have someone who kind of has this duality of both extremely high performance athlete, but also very much a human, relatable side to him that I think a lot of people can get behind. So cool to see more of those personal moments. Let's jump into race weekend. So The Paddock Cat was the star of the weekend. Very cute. I think every single Formula One team had a variety of different memes and pictures. And this cat was just the busiest thing all weekend. For the circuit itself, a punishing street circuit. It's narrow and windy, yet still pretty fast. There are still overtaking opportunities. It was kind of slippery. There was a lot of wind. They called the track an ice rink during quali. And I think it was Julian Palmer who said that it was the weirdest dry session in quali that he has ever commentated on, because people were kind of sliding over, making mistakes, which we'll talk about with Oscar Piastri in the race as well. But yeah, I think part of that was wind. There was a tailwind, which had a bit of an effect. But for quali, we had 6 red flags just during quali alone, which is a record. It was almost a 2-hour session. It was longer than the race last year, longer than the race this year, and just kind of insane to watch. So for Q1, we had 3 red flags in Q1 alone. I had a friend text me. They were watching delayed and they had just finished Q1 and they were like, that was the longest thing ever. I'm like, buckle up, girlfriend, because we've got a long way to go. So out in Q1, we had Colapinto, Hülkenberg, Ocon, Gasly, and Albon. Albon missed his turning point, apparently due to sun, but also the wind. So he had a crash, and then there was a big crash from Colapinto, also an off from Gasly. So a double nightmare for Alpine in Q1. Ocon had issues with braking. He was disappointed in the sort of post-quali interviews. He ended up getting disqualified from quali. So really a tough situation and weekend for him. But one notable thing from Q1 was that Gabriel Bortoleto outqualified Hülkenberg. So Gabriel Bortoleto does continue to perform pretty well, which is great to see. For Q2 out, we had Alonso, Hamilton, Bortoleto, Stroll, and Ollie Berman. Some notable things that happened here: Hadjar had an off in his warm-up lap, and then Ollie Berman hit the wall and caused another red flag, which was sad for him because he was looking pretty fast in practice throughout the weekend. And then Charles also had an off in the runoff zone and had a lap deleted for track limits. He brushed the wall a few times, and honestly, it felt like he was pretty lucky to get into Q3. And then Oscar also hit the wall in Q2. So kind of crazy things happening. In Q3, the name of the game was just kind of getting out there first because it started to rain. So Sainz, Lawson, and Hadjar really won there. They got a lap in before the rain came down. Charles then hit the wall, which brought out the red flag, caused him to start P10. So at this point, Sainz was first, Lawson, and then Hadjar. No other cars had been able to set a fast lap. So the red flag and the rain coming down, we were all just kind of hoping and praying because we were like, Williams hasn't been on pole since 2014. I think it was Felipe Massa. And Sainz came on the radio and he was like, you know, you can start dancing to see if it rains a bit harder. Like, we were all just kind of hoping and waiting. We finally got racing again. And then Oscar Piastri went into the wall, caused another red flag, which resulted in a P9 start for him. It's the only time he has started outside the top 3, I believe, all season. So really a bummer of a weekend for him. And then we were just still waiting. Carlos did have an incredible lap. It wasn't just the fact that it was raining. He actually did have a really good time. But of course, Max pulled out an insane lap to get pole. But no one else could beat Carlos. I guess if it was going to be anyone, it was going to be Max. But, you know, I was happy to see that. And it was just so cool to see a driver of Max's caliber be able to pull that out and be so excited about it. But there was like sort of a pit of dread in my stomach watching Max go around the track with, like, you know, 0.5 seconds faster each sector. I was kind of like, oh, the dread of knowing that Carlos wasn't going to get pole. But I was happy for Max, just really wanted Carlos to be up there. But it was Williams' first front row start since 2021. And then we had Liam Lawson and Kimi Antonelli. So really fun starting 2 front rows. And then Lando Norris, notably, was all the way back in 7th. So that was a bummer for him. He wasn't really able to capitalize on the fact that Oscar had crashed out of quali and was starting P10. So it would have been nice for him to start a little bit higher there, especially for the championship dreams. One other thing about quali was Jamie Chadwick's post-quali interviews were so good. She is an absolute pro. And honestly petitioned to get her up there for every race because I loved hearing from her. I thought her questions were really good. She managed to get some great things out of them that I feel like a lot of times in post-race or post-quali interviews, it's kind of just the standard questions. Sometimes you roll your eyes a little bit at the questions that are asked, and I get it. It's a hard job, but I just, all of that to say, I think Jamie did incredibly well and love seeing her up there. For the race, so Max started on hards, notably, and then most of the other top drivers started on mediums. This was the beginning of the end for Oscar Piastri, who jumped the start, just a very simple error. And then that caused an anti-stall, which then caused him to fall back to P20 as he was starting in P9. And then he went into the wall on the first lap, I think it was at turn 5, and his race was done. It caused a safety car, and yeah, that was it. It also caused Alonso to jump the start, which gave him a 5-second time penalty. But also on the start, Norris lost 2 places within the first few laps down to P9. So really not a great weekend for McLaren, which I will talk about in a little bit. I'm just going to go through sort of the rest of the main talking points for the race and then dive into all the different questions and discussion points, because there's a lot to talk about, even if the race I felt like wasn't the most exciting after lap one. But Charles was the first to pit of the top runners. He pit on lap 20. He was on mediums. And then Antonelli and Lawson followed suit. Antonelli did have a couple laps to warm up the hard tires ahead of Lawson, and he had a crazy pass on Lawson for track position. So that was great to see, especially after the comments from Monza of Toto being like the weekend was underwhelming and Kimi not having a great weekend in Monza. So it was nice to see Kimi hopefully regain some confidence. And obviously George had a great weekend, but it was nice to see Kimi up there as well. And hopefully the beginning of an upward trend for young Antonelli. Then of course there was Sainz. He was sort of running his own strategy in P2. He was telling the team not to let Russell undercut, which Sainz did pit first, but Russell's pace on the hards was just better. And so when Russell did pit, he had built up enough of a window to that he came out ahead. So Carlos did try his best on the strategy there, but it unfortunately did not allow him to keep P. The other main happening was Norris having another slow pit stop over 4 seconds when it mattered, you know? So I feel like there are going to be some pep talks and a lot of pit stop practice for that McLaren team, 2 in a row. For Lando, which is hard to explain. But it wasn't just the pit stop. Lando wasn't really making much progress. The car was really just not there. And so he wasn't really able to capitalize on Oscar Piastri's woes, which was unfortunate for the championship, but he did close the gap a little bit. And yeah, not a ton of excitement for the rest of the race, except for George's great stint on hards, which allowed him to get back into podium contention and P2. In the end, we had Max winning the race in sort of a classic Max Verstappen 2023 type drive. He won by over 10 seconds. And then we had George P2, Carlos P3, and then Kimi Antonelli, Liam Lawson, and Yuki Tsunoda. So good to see Yuki back up there as well. And of course, incredible for Liam. It was his career best finish in F1. So great. Great times. VCarb really did a great job this weekend. Hadjar was also in the points, so a double points weekend for them.
In business, they say you can have better, cheaper, or faster, but you only get to pick 2. What if you could have all 3 at the same time? That's exactly what Cohere, Thomson Reuters, and Specialized Bikes have since they upgraded to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure. OCI is the blazing fast platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs, where you can run any workload in a high availability, consistently high performance environment, and spend less than you would with other clouds. How is it faster? OCI's block storage gives you more operations per second. Cheaper? OCI costs up to 50% less for compute, 70% less for storage, and 80% less for networking. Better? In test after test, OCI customers report lower latency and higher bandwidth versus other clouds. This is the cloud built for AI and all your biggest workloads. Right now, with zero commitment, try OCI for free. Head to oracle.com/paddock. That's oracle.com/paddock.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
But let's dive into some of the discussion points, because first up, I think we need to talk about Oscar Piastri. What in the world happened? Like, this did not look like the Oscar that we know, did not look like unflappable Oscar. I did like his video after the race where he apologized, but also just said, you know, I'm human. I make mistakes. They were dumb mistakes. They were simple errors. Like, I apologize for that. And we're going to learn and take it forward, the sort of classic F1 driver PR spiel. But I did appreciate him saying that he's human. I think some people forget that with Oscar, especially with someone similar to Max Verstappen, who is like so one-track minded, so serious. And especially for Oscar, which is different from Max, he's so kind of calm on the radio, just very unflappable. It can be unsettling, I feel like, to see someone like that make those mistakes. And so I don't really know how to explain what happened. It's probably just a blip in the radar for Oscar, and it clearly was a difficult weekend for McLaren with the car. They were not showing their usual dominance. One thing that was funny about Oscar, just the footage of the drivers watching the race sitting around the track after their DNF just never gets old. Obviously, we had that in Zandvoort with Charles on that Marshall's phone, but Oscar's little setup watching this race in a chair and clearly like on a Marshall's phone, just like propped up against the barrier with his feet up. I'm like, this is such an unserious, silly sport sometimes that it just never gets old. And I absolutely love to see those. And I hope they keep coming. We honestly need to create a compilation of those at some point at the end of the season, because this season has just been absolute cinema on that front. So also talking about the McLaren sort of lack of dominance, or their dominance waning this weekend, they just really didn't seem to have a ton of grip on the track. But it wasn't just the car. Obviously, that pit stop performance was lacking, maybe not the best strategy. They, of course, did not lock down constructors as they were hoping. But one thing that was a bummer is just Lando failing to capitalize on Oscar's bad weekend. I mean, and like I was saying, it really, to be fair to him, it wasn't, the car just wasn't there. And there have been weekends as well where Max has had the same, you know, not great car and has finished outside the top five. So I think in some sense, no one can defy the odds all the time if the car just isn't there. So I think for all the people talking about how Lando didn't do a great job and didn't capitalize on Oscar's mistakes or whatever, like, I think to some degree that's true, but also it wasn't totally his fault. Like, the car and the performance just didn't seem to be there. But speaking of Max, that kind of brings us to the question of, is a Max championship still on? He had a Grand Slam, pole, led all laps, fastest lap, win, back-to-back poles and wins. He had that in Monza as well. And in terms of the championship, he is sitting 69 points behind Oscar Piastri and only 44 points behind Lando Norris. This is very much still possible, and it would be the most Max-coded thing ever to be counted out at this point of the Drivers' Championship. Everyone's talking about Oscar versus Lando and what happens there. It would be so Max-coded for everyone to count him out, and also him to say, let's not forget, like, a few weeks ago, he was saying he wasn't going to win again this season. He just won the past two races and got pole, and he seems to be doing insane things with a car that isn't always there. And so you can never count out Max Verstappen. Obviously, it will take a lot for him to make up the deficit that he has in the championship. And of course, this track was relatively unique. There aren't, you know, 10 more Bakus on the calendar for the rest of the season. So we'll see how McLaren's car fares. I think Oscar and Lando are clearly talented enough to keep it in their camp. But if they continue to show cracks and make those types of mistakes that Oscar made this weekend, like, it very much is in the realm of possibility that Max could come back. Now, if I was a betting woman, I probably would not bet on that happening, but I definitely think it's a distinct possibility. And like I said, you can never count out Max Verstappen. Another thing I want to talk about is George. He got P2, kind of came from nowhere. No one was really expecting that. Like, he didn't even start in the top five. So great for him. He also had an infection and was sick. He missed media day on Thursday. He also sounded horribly sick in the post-race interview. Like, he just didn't sound good. He sounded exhausted. His voice, you could tell, was kind of gone, but really awesome performance from him. And I think, again, I have feel like I've coined this phrase at this point, and I said it a lot at the beginning of the season, but justice for George. I feel like he's one of the more underrated drivers, and for him to call his own strategy this race, get P2, competing against some really incredible drivers and not starting in the top five, and then also be sick during this and have that incredible pace on the hards, just chef's kiss, and really think George deserves a little bit more credit. When is that contract announcement coming? The Mercedes contract announcement for George Russell, is it coming? I mean, I would assume so at this point. Kimi Antonelli also has not been announced as renewed yet either. I don't know what Mercedes is waiting for, but I kind of hope that it comes soon, because I feel like it's a little bit unsettling. I'm sure the drivers kind of, you know, have an idea of what's going on and where the contract negotiations are at. Maybe it's already signed and they just haven't announced it yet, but I'm like, where is it? I would definitely put my money on both George and Kimi being re-signed at Mercedes, but I guess we'll see. I feel like the Max thing is a distant dream. Max, of course, announced that he'd be staying at Red Bull next year, and especially with these results that he's having in the team right now and with Christian Horner out, I don't see Max going anywhere anytime soon. But like, what else would Mercedes be holding out for? I have to imagine it's just like minor contractual fine print things, but who knows? But speaking of another driver who called his own strategy, can't believe we've waited this long to give Carlos his moment in the spotlight and really talk about how incredible of a weekend it was for him. It was such a smooth operation. I loved that they were playing Smooth Operator after. What an iconic thing. And also our radio of the week was him talking about how it was his best podium of his career and that it was his first smooth operation in a Williams, but certainly not the last. And I do have to believe that. He was talking about how you need to trust the team around you. And I just feel like it's so poetic. I think I said this in the Radio of the Week caption, but if you had told me that Carlos would be on podium in a Williams before Lewis at Ferrari or before Ferrari got a first win, I wouldn't have believed it. I would have, I mean, I would have loved to hear it, not the Lewis part, but I would have loved to hear that Carlos was succeeding in Williams and Williams as a team was kind of back in points and podium contention. It's just incredible to see the journey they've been on. And yes, of course, the rain played a role in this weekend, but Carlos really deserved that. He put in a great quality time and then was able to kind of defend and call the right strategy. And the team really put it all together, both on strategy and pit stops and everything. And so I really feel like this was such a well-deserved weekend for Carlos and for the team. And for that reason, obviously, he deserves my MVP. So I'm going to give that to him early before I get to the LVPs and whatnot. I know the phrase is everybody's a Ferrari fan, but I do really feel like this new era is everybody is a Williams fan, because they are such underdogs and they're such a historic team. They've got incredible leadership. Everybody really loves James Vowles. And I loved the gift that Toto sent over that said, "Lucky bastard, congrats on your first podium as team principal." And I just thought that was very sweet. For those of you who are maybe newer to the sport and don't know as much about James Vowles' background, he spent a lot of his career at Mercedes, especially during their era of dominance. So he and Toto are very close and have worked very closely together. And it's really cool to see an engineer brain and a data brain in James Vowles become a team principal and become such an incredible leader. And hopefully, I don't want to speak out of turn, but hopefully he will bring Williams back to kind of the place that they deserve to be in and where they've worked so hard to make the progress this year. I mean, we've seen the stats now that Williams has, I don't know what it is now. I think they might have over 100 points now with Carlos's win, but that's more than their last like four or five seasons combined, which is just incredible to see. And I think Alex Albon standing under the podium with the team just tells you everything you need to know about that team, is they all rally around each other. One thing that was really interesting was that there was a poll in our Discord this week before the weekend, before anything with Williams or Carlos happened. There was a poll about which team you'd most want to work for. And Williams came in on top with like over 85% of the vote or something like that. It was something crazy. And I feel like that's not just social media talking. I mean, I think Williams has definitely done a great job on the social media game in terms of making their people, making their culture known and open and transparent and Carlos and Alex are just lovable drivers, and James Vowles as well. Like, they're just such a lovable team. But I think there's also something like more substantial behind that in terms of their culture, in terms of the way they show up, in terms of their attitude, especially when they've had their down years and down weekends, and how they've sort of bounced back and rallied together, how they celebrate each other. But I'm curious from you all listening, if you didn't vote in the Discord poll, which team that would be for you? If you could work for any team, which would it be? We have to, of course, also talk about Carlos's lucky charm all weekend, Sparkles the Unicorn. So the backstory behind this was some little girl submitted a question to Carlos and Alex and asking what she should name her unicorn, Sparkles or Sprinkles, and if Carlos could wear a unicorn on his helmet. And Carlos said, if you send us the unicorn sticker, I will wear it. And they did. And so Carlos had his lucky charm all weekend. And that may or may not be why he had the result he did. We'll never know. One other hilarious thing about related to Carlos is that he and Charles flew back to, they were supposed to fly to Nice to go home, but they got diverted due to a storm. So they landed in the middle of Italy and they rented a van and are driving back through Italy to get to Monaco, which is the most hilarious thing ever. If you haven't seen the video of Charles and Carlos driving in this van on the way back to Monaco, I highly recommend you go see it. I saw it on the F1 Instagram, but I'm sure it's elsewhere as well. Okay, so I already gave my MVP, but for LVP, I guess I unfortunately just have to give it to Oscar and to McLaren. Obviously love Oscar, still a big Oscar fan, but those mistakes were just, they were definitely LVP status. They were things that could have been avoided, just a bad weekend, and every driver has them. But yeah, I think it is LVP worthy, unfortunately. And yeah, McLaren for the car just not being there, the pit stops, and Lando not being able to capitalize on Oscar's woes, and the team kind of putting him in that position to some degree with the car and the pit stop is, yeah, just not what they needed. Okay, so for the standings, we have Oscar Piastri with 324, Norris with 299. So 25 points separate them. Still pretty close. Max Verstappen, 255, George Russell, 212, Leclerc, 165, Hamilton, 121, Antonelli, 78, Albon, 70, Hadjar, 39, and Hulkenberg, 37. Four constructors, we have McLaren at 623, Mercedes at 290, Ferrari at 286, Red Bull, 272, Williams, 101, so they have broken that 100 mark. VCARB 72, Aston Martin 62, Kick Sauber 55, Haas 44, and Alpine 20. And with that, I'll be back for Singapore, which is going to be such a crazy race. I'm super excited for it. It's going to be a wild one. Singapore never disappoints. It's a night race and always super hot, and it's a physical one. So it's going to be a fun one.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Because like, I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.